Good evening, everyone. I'll invite you to be turning to Joshua 24. We'll begin there in just a moment, look at some things that I pray tonight will be of some help to us and will be encouraging to us. I know that you have had a hard day. You've probably worked most of the day, and you need to be revived a little bit, and I hope that's some of the things that we can do tonight. I appreciate what Reagan said about our worship. You know, Reagan's pretty funny. I think that's good. But there'll come a time when I'll get to talk about Reagan, too, I think, a little bit. But I like that. I appreciate that very much. If I appear to be a little sluggish tonight, it's because Rick and Monty Frazier took me to Mom's Diner for lunch. And I not only had a cheeseburger, I had a double cheeseburger. And I had my cardiologist on speed dial just in case. But, man, that was good stuff. Don't tell my wife I went there, please. But I tell you what, it was really good, as is everywhere I go. And what makes it even more enjoyable are the people that I'm with. And that just is a tremendous advantage, and I appreciate that so much. I was able to go to McClenny's last night to do a devotional for the high school and the middle school kids. I told you I was impressed with them, but I just didn't know the extent to which I was impressed until I was with them last night, and I thoroughly enjoyed myself, and I pray that some good was done there, but we sang, and we talked about some things that affect our spiritual lives, and it was really good for me, so I appreciate being asked to do that. I always, as you know, I always enjoy being with the kids. That's just an extra bonus, and I really do appreciate that. I know we have a number of guests here tonight. Some of you are not from this congregation. You're from elsewhere. You may be visiting from the community, and I want you to know how much I appreciate you being here. That says a lot about your heart and about your willingness to come. And it's good to see several of you who are personal friends of mine, and I really appreciate you coming as well. It's always good to see you. I want to say one more thing before I get into the lesson. Somebody brought me a gift basket to my hotel room Saturday. And I don't know who's responsible for it, but I'd like to hug you if you'd tell me, because it is just tremendous. And I sent a picture to my wife, and she said, take a picture of that and find out what all's in it, because I want to do something like that. I said, for me? She said, no, for the guest preachers who come. I said, well, okay, we'll do that. We'll do that. Well, tonight, I want to talk to you about a lesson that I would call As For Me and My House. And so I've looked forward to talking to you about this. It's primarily, I would say, it's for parents, it's for grandparents, it's for anybody who is part of a family unit, which are really all of us. And I think there are some valuable lessons for all of us to gain by talking about this. Now, tomorrow night, my plan is to talk about, to preach a lesson that I call 10 Commandments for Young People. They're just practical things that I think the Bible teaches. They're admonitions that I think are founded in Scripture that I not only through just studying the Bible but and thinking about that, but just through some experience of my own. These are things that I think would be important for young people to think about, particularly as they live the life of a Christian. And then Wednesday night, as we close, I want to preach a lesson that I would call The Secrets of a Well-Lived Life. And I want to share some thoughts with you, as you might anticipate, from the book of Ecclesiastes, and we'll be looking at that Wednesday night again, if the Lord wills. So, turning back to Joshua 24, I want us to think about that. You know, the book of Joshua documents the conquering of the land. It documents the dividing of the nation as the Israelites move into the land of Canaan. And when you get to Joshua 24, Joshua reminds the people that they have a choice. I think they've always known that, but he states that by saying something that is very, very familiar to us. And you're familiar with what that statement is. The statement itself says, "And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." The question posed is, what God or gods will you and your family serve? I think that's an interesting question that he poses to the Israelites as they move into this land, as they're thinking about that. And I think Joshua knows the importance of that question. It is the question for every family to answer. The question for you tonight and your family, regardless of where your family is on the spectrum in terms of are they younger, are they older, is who will your family serve? Will they serve the God of heaven, Jehovah God, or will they serve other gods? And there are plenty of other gods to serve, obviously, but that is the question. And I think the key to that is that leadership in the family is a key to what the family does spiritually. I'm going to mention that just a minute. I'm going to talk a little bit about that for just a moment. You know, leadership is in the family. It's not exclusive. I wouldn't say it's exclusively the responsibility of the father, but I would say primarily it is. I believe God places the man in the role of leadership. This lesson is not about leadership. This lesson, but I do want to make that point. I believe that's part of my responsibility as a man to my family. And I think it's been that way from the very beginning, and I think that is a much-needed discussion. My guess is that's talked about from this pulpit a great deal, about men being leaders and men being the guides in their family, especially as it relates to their spiritual nature. But I want to say this. There are too many men who abandon the task. They don't even begin the task. And maybe when they do, they find it to be too hard, and they seek to turn it over primarily to the woman in their family. It may be a wife, it may be a mother, it may be a grandmother, but many times that happens. Not, it's not always that way. But I've seen that happen over and over in my life in terms of the people that I've been able to come in contact with. But I want to say this. I believe that that's the biggest problem among families spiritually. And that is that the father is not the leader. Now, that's my judgment. I realize that's a subjective comment. But I think if you really pinpointed the problems for most families, it would be that the father is either absent spiritually or he's abdicated his responsibilities as the spiritual leader. And that creates a serious problem. I know a preacher, an older preacher that I have great respect for. I've heard him on several occasions say he believes that 90% of the spiritual problems in family are a result of men who don't do what they ought to do spiritually. That's a subjective statement. And he's not saying I think what he's saying is that just seems a reasonable percentage to talk about the problem. And again, I don't know. And I know there are other factors that are involved in that. But I want to tell you, my good friends, if you're a man and if you're a spiritual person, you should think seriously, as I should, as the spiritual leader of my family, we should give a great deal of thought to the kind of leadership, especially spiritually, that we provide to our family. I want you to think about what Joshua said. He said, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Have you thought about that a little deeper? As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He goes from a singular idea to a plural idea. And it seems as though he's making a statement for his entire family. And that intrigues me to some degree. How could Joshua make that kind of statement? Well, I think what he's saying is, it's not that I dictate everything in my family, but I think he's saying to whatever degree I can influence my family towards spiritual things, that's what I'm intending to do. That's my intent. And I think if all of us who are spiritual leaders in our family would just simply have that intent to say, you know, as much, to maybe put it in another way, as much as in me lieth, I'm going to do my best to see that my family is focused on a spiritual element that is a priority. That's what that statement seems to me to be saying. And it's interesting, I think, that the people seem to follow what Joshua said. He gives them a choice. At least he states that choice. Are you going to do this or are you going to do that? Because when you get to chapter 24 and verse 16 right after, he says, "So the people answered and said, 'Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods, for the Lord our God is he who brought us and our fathers up out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage, who did those great signs in your sight and preserved us in all the way that we went and among all the people through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out from before us all the people, including the Amorites who dwelt in the land. We also will serve the Lord, for he is our God.'" And then verse 24 specifically, "And the people said to Joshua, 'The Lord our God, we will serve, and the voice we will obey.' And the degree to which that happened is found really in verse 31. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had known all the works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. I mean, it was a good time spiritually for leadership in Israel. And Joshua, it seems, had been, if not the strongest influence, at least one of the strongest influences for that. What a statement. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. What did he do? That's the question. What did he do? I believe every man here who is spiritual, and I believe that's probably every man here, I believe every one of us wants to be that kind of man. We as we think about that, maybe as we've married and as we've had children or as we've had grandchildren, as we think about our family, even an extended family, all of us would say, that's what I want. That's who I want to be. And I get that. But I'll tell you what, that's hard. And most of us, most all of us look back. I can look back in my own life as a father. When my children were younger, my children are gone. But I look back and there are things that I wish I would have done differently. There are some things I wish I would have done better. There are some things I'm pleased about that I did. But overall, there are things that I wish I would have done better. And I'm confident I'm talking to men tonight who feel the same way. Yes, you wish there were things. And I may be talking to some men tonight who are in a position to do some things different with their own family. And if that's the case, you need to think about that very seriously. Because that time will pass pretty quickly when you can have the kind of bearing that I know you want to have. What did he do? I think he followed what God had told him to do. And I want us to look at that. Because I think what he did is stated for us in the early chapters of Deuteronomy, particularly in Deuteronomy 6. Joshua, as a leader, listened to what God said. Deuteronomy 6. Let me get to that chart. Now, this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God did to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you're crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. What's a parent to do? Do you sometimes feel a little lost about that? Do you read passages like we just read from Deuteronomy 6 and go, man, you know, Kenny, that's hard. Yeah, it is. It's hard, but you know, being a parent has always been hard. And here's what I'd say to you about that. This is going to sound harsh. You don't want to do the job, then don't be a parent. It's just like what I'd say to people, you know, it's coming to me and they're having difficulty. And, you know, talking about marital problems. And if you don't want to have marital problems, why'd you get married? Now, don't misunderstand me. I know that problems can arise even when people want to be married. I get all that. But sometimes people act like, you know what, I want the relationship, but I don't want the responsibility. And to that I say, well, too bad. Too bad. You have relationship, you always have responsibility. And when you have responsibility, you always have accountability. God's going to hold us accountable for every relationship that we have. And when it comes to parenting, all of us must do the very best we can to do what it is that God said. I wish there was a magic pill, don't you? I wish I could just take a pill every morning and that made you the greatest parent in the world. It's funny, before I became a parent, you know, I thought I was going to be the greatest parent to ever live. Kind of like before I became a husband, I thought I was going to be the greatest husband. That took about 10 minutes after I'd been married to realize that wasn't going to be the case. I turned my trophy back in pretty quick. But that's a difficult thing, and I get that for all of us. It is a difficult thing, but there's no magic pill. There's no follow these 10 steps and everything's going to be okay. What we've got to do is do what's talked about in Deuteronomy 6. Right after what we just read, here's what the text tells us. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. Love God with all of your heart. You've heard it. You've heard it talked about from Deuteronomy. You've heard it talked about in the Gospels where Jesus would say, but you've got to love God with all your heart, soul, strength, and in some places your mind as well. All that all is hard. Just think about loving something with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. Heart stuff is hard because that's where the real issues of life are decided. Proverbs 4, guard your heart. For out of it come the issues of life. It's difficult, and there are a lot of things that we can talk about in reference to that, loving God with all of our heart. But I want to try to encapsulate that in an illustration. If you're a mother of a daughter, I want you to think about this. Would you be okay with your daughter having your faith when she's your age? Would you right now say, you know what? If when my daughter turns my age, if she had what I had spiritually at her age, I would be satisfied with that. Now, I'm not asking you to say, well, no, I want her to be better than me. I want you to legitimately ask yourself the question and be honest about that. Because I would hope that you would say, yes. If she had my faith, if she had what I perceive to be my faith, when she's my age, I would be satisfied with that. I think that speaks well of what you're trying to do for her and who she's trying to become. I'm not saying that's the only test, but I'm saying that kind of brings it home to us, doesn't it? If you could replace her situation with your situation at your age, would you be okay with that? Or if you have a son, man, how would you feel about your son being who you are spiritually when he gets to be your age? How would you feel about that? And if the answer is, that's not what I want for him, then you need to do some soul searching. But if that is what you want, would you be satisfied with that? And I don't mean that there's a perfection. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying if the process that you've gone through spiritually to get where you are spiritually at this point in time in your life, and that's not to say you're going to get better and you're not going to grow and you're not going to be strengthened. It's not to say any of that. But it's simply to ask, would you be satisfied with a son or a daughter who has your faith at the time when they're your age? Do you love the Lord with all of your heart? I think those questions are sometimes hard to answer, though it's kind of an abstract question. But you know, even though it is, I don't think the Lord would have said that if he didn't intend for us to have some level of measuring to be able to understand, yes, I'm doing that. It's kind of like Colossians 3 when Paul says, set your mind on things above. You know, I sometimes read that and I go, what in the world are you talking about, Paul? How am I supposed to know if I'm setting my mind on things above? I think about things in the world an awful lot. How can I be sure that I'm doing that? Well, again, I don't think Paul would have written that if there wasn't some way for us to know that we're accomplishing those things. So when you think about the statement, think about the most important thing you can do is not just talk to them, and we're going to get to that in a minute, but you need to show them. You need to show them what faith in God is all about. That's going to speak volumes. That's going to do more than anything else you'll ever say to them at all. You show them. When they look at you, they don't have to ask a lot of questions about what does a Christian look like? What does a person who loves God with all their heart look like? I'm looking at that person. I'm looking at a man who loves God. I'm looking at a woman who loves God. Show them what God intends for that kind of person to be. I think that's the first thing Moses says the Lord wants. You need to show them. Let a heart be full of love. And you love God with a heart that shows them first. That's the first thing he says. You show them that that's the kind of person you are. And then you get to verse 7. It says this, you shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way. When you lie down, when you rise up, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. Well, the principle stated. This is a statement about principle. What he says is you need to do it diligently. That's another one of those words. It's hard. It's hard to really define, isn't it? We know what being diligent means, don't we? Staying on task, doing that. But when he says that, he does say, this is specifically how you do that. I can't answer a lot of these questions for you. You know, you may read this, and when I say what this passage says is teaching, you may look at me and go, Kenny, how do you do that? I don't know exactly for you. But what this passage tells us is it's an ongoing process. It happens when they're at home. It happens when they're away. It happens when they're in the house. It happens when they're outside of the house. It happens all the time. And I think what the Lord's saying is, you know, you've got to figure that out for yourself. But you've got to make some decisions about how to apply the business of teaching your children. And I'll tell you something that was told to me early on when I had kids. And it stuck with me. And I remembered it. I didn't always accomplish everything with my children in terms of teaching that I wanted to accomplish. But what was said to me stuck with me. And here it is. If the only Bible teaching your kids get is when they're in this facility, you're in trouble. And I believe that. And I think what's happened is, you know, some, we may be here all the time. You may not miss a Bible class, but if that's all your kids get, you're not fulfilling your responsibility. That doesn't say make sure they get a Bible class at church that's good. I think that's part of it. I don't know exactly what the Lord had in mind when he told the children of Israel, this is what you need to do. You need to teach your children. But I think that's what he's saying. You've got to figure that out. I've seen some people do it, and from my vantage point, they do a good job. I tell this story a lot of places. And I tell it because it means so much to me. It just made such an impression on me. Years ago, I was doing a lot of traveling over the country, and I went to Dothan, Alabama. I'm going to mention the name of a family. Some of you are going to know this family. John and Becky Haley live in Dothan. John, he was a retired orthopedic surgeon. And I stayed in their home. And I stayed upstairs in the room with their oldest son, John Jr. And John was a senior in high school, and so we stayed in twin beds up on the second floor. And I was staying there that night, and early in the morning, it was still dark outside, as I recall, I heard the sweetest voice come over the speaker in the room and said, hey, boys, it's time to get up. And I'm sure I looked at my watch without moving much because I didn't want John to think I was awake. Now, it said something like 5:45, and I'm thinking, what? I think I don't have anywhere to go. Becky's got that sweet voice going, you know, y'all need to get up, come on down. And I just played possum. My back was turned to the wall, and my back was turned to John, so I acted like I didn't hear him or didn't hear her. And I didn't hear John move too much. So I just laid there. And in just a few minutes, I heard her say, are you boys up? And John, by this time, John had gotten up, and he came over and he kind of punched me on the back, and I kind of shuffled like I just heard her say that. And he said, Kenny, we got to get up. And I said, we? I said, what are we getting up so early for? He said, we have a Devo. I looked at my watch, but then it's about 6 o'clock. I said, we got a Devo this morning, 6 o'clock. He said, well, you know, you don't have to go, but I said, no, I'm going. I'm going. If everybody in the family's going, I'm a guest, I'm going. So I got up, went downstairs, and by the time I got down there, all the kids were gathered. They were down there. And John was there with his Bible. He was dressed for the day. He was had to go into the hospital to make rounds. That's back when doctors did that kind of thing. And I remember to this day what we talked about. He talked to his kids about Acts 16:2, where it says that Timothy was well spoken of by the brethren. I mentioned this yesterday. I mentioned that passage. That's what he talked about his kids. And he talked about the reputation that his kids were creating at school and at church and in other places. And I sat there probably half awake, but as I sat there, I thought, man, this is good. I thought, how impressive is that? John and I, he finished, and John and I went back upstairs. So I said, how often do y'all do that, John? He said, every weekday morning. I went, every morning? He said, yeah. I thought, that's pretty impressive. But I found out later that his dad, that was the time that his dad had to do that. Like most men and women too, we're busy. He was busy. Had a large patient base. He was at the hospital a lot and at his clinic an awful lot. But that was the time that he designated have some relationship in terms of spiritual relationship with his kids. He did that every weekday morning. Of the four biological kids that they had, and they raised some other kids too. But of the four biological kids they had, their oldest daughter was, well, not the oldest. John, I think, is the oldest. John is an elder at the Valrico Church in Brandon, Florida. Tracy married Russ Bowman. Margaret married Mike Provines, who is an elder at the Marion Street Church in Athens, Alabama. And Tim is an elder in the church in Dothan, Alabama. Now, I'm not suggesting that what you need to do is get your kids up at 6 o'clock every weekday morning and have a devotion. If that's what you want to do, that's fine, because I know you're looking at me going, what'd you do? I know what you're thinking. I'm not going to just act like it doesn't exist. I'll tell you this. I didn't get my kids up at 6 o'clock every morning. I knew that was not going to work. My kids and my wife and I had conversations about spiritual things on a fairly regular basis, but I didn't do what John Haley did. And I'm not suggesting that you have to do that. I'm suggesting that that's what John and Becky Haley had decided to do. And at least to some degree, that affected the spiritual lives of their children. I know all four of those kids. Not only do I know those four kids, I know John and Becky's grandkids from those four kids. And it's gone pretty well spiritually for them. And I think part of that, anyway, is because a decision was made many years ago to show from a fatherly and a motherly standpoint that this was an important thing for their kids to get. You take that for what it's worth. But understand that teaching them is a responsibility that every single one of us has. And there are no mulligans. We don't get it back. And I would encourage you to take advantage of that opportunity. And then a third thing, and really a final thing that I want to spend a few minutes talking about with you, is that you need to tell them later in this same chapter. When your son asks you in time to come, saying, what's the meaning of the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord our God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed signs and wonders before our eyes, great and severe against Egypt, Pharaoh, and all his household. And then he brought us out from there that he might bring us in to give us the land of which he swore to our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive, as it is this day. Then it will be righteousness for us if we are careful to observe all these commandments before the Lord our God, as he has commanded us. Well, there's a lot in that. And I want to just try to grab a few things from it that I think can be helpful. I think part of what he says is that as a parent, you need to tell them how good God has been to you. There's something about telling a son and a daughter that I want to speak from experience. I want to tell you what God has done in my life. I want to tell you what God has done in your mother's life. I want to tell you what God has done to us together. And he says in this passage, I want to tell you what God did for our ancestors. He brought them out. He's brought us out. And he's done many good things. And tell them that it's for their good. Ways. See, that's another thing. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the next couple of lessons, maybe make a few points about that. But doing what God says, listen, it's for your good. If you're in this audience tonight and you're a young person, don't think that God's punishing you by saying, you need to follow me. God's saying that because he wants to help you. It's kind of like what we talked about yesterday. He wants you to be saved. He wants you to have the best life. That's why he says, you need to follow me. You need to do this. And we need parents who tell our kids, this is what happens when you follow God. And again, sometimes that's hard to do. He tells him, you need to be careful to do all that the Lord has said. And I find this interesting. And I'm gonna make a couple of points here that I think will be helpful to you. The text says, when your son asks you in the time to come, that implies to me he's going to ask or she's going to ask. And I want to suggest something to you. If your children are not asking questions, something's not right. It may be that you've taught them well enough and that they're convicted enough, which is good, and they're convinced, and I hope that's the case. And maybe there's not been a problem with that. But in many cases, especially now, a lot of kids are asking questions. They're asking questions about, you know, how they've been raised, what they've been taught, the Bible classes they've been in. And quite frankly, again, this is a subjective comment from me, and you may disagree with that, and that's fine. But from my vantage point, in some cases, I think they have legitimate concerns. They've been in Bible classes. But in some cases, in some, not all, certainly, but I'm not sure they have gotten as good of information and as sound of information as they need to get in order to make a good, solid, biblical conclusion. Now, again, I know that's a big statement. And I'm not saying every church, I'm not saying every teacher, every parent's guilty of any of that. But I'm just saying in some cases, I think their concerns are legitimate. But what the Lord said is, they're going to ask. In time to come, they're going to ask. And you need to think about that. So when your son asks you in time to come saying, there are words that identify questions. They're interrogatives. Like, what and why and how and when and which. And when you get to the Hebrew, when you look at the Hebrew, if you're reading this, of course it's read from right to left, when your son asks you in time to come saying, what is the meaning of the testimonies? That word, M-A-H, ma. That's that interrogative word. That's that word that's used anytime the question is asked. And so what the Lord is saying is when a word, whether it's how, whether it's when, whether it's what, but it's a word where there needs to be some answers. They want some answers. You need to be ready when the time comes because that word is going to be said and they're going to want to know what is the meaning of it. Can you imagine thinking about what's written in Leviticus? And just think with me. Can you imagine somebody coming, your son coming home and going, Dad, Did you see that list? We got to do all that. Are you kidding me? Can't you just imagine some of these comments? You know, your 10-year-old son comes in and goes, "Whoa, this is wearing me out." And I'm going to be the man one of these, and I'm going to have to do all that. I can just see some of that going on. But questions are going to come. How many questions could they ask? Well, let me just think about a few. The breadth of the questions might be, why do all these? Why do these particular things? Why are there so many things to do? And better not, do we have to do all of them? Do we have to do all of them? Or what sense does that make? You know, when you're younger sometimes, you look at things that the Bible may say, and you're going, well, that just doesn't make any sense. If you said that, you don't have to be young to say that. You say, that just doesn't make any sense to me. Well, that's a question that probably could have very probably been asked. Or are all the details important? Does it really all matter? You ever been asked that question as a parent? Do the details matter? Does it really matter whether or not we take the Lord's Supper every week? What if we just had a little instrumental music? I get the loud, long stuff. I get the banging and all that. What if we just had a little bit to try to make the mood a little bit different? You ever get questions like that? I could go on, and you could probably go on as well. But a lot of times it's, are all these things important? Do all these things matter? And we need to be ready for that. Or that's not what I expected. Or that's not what I would have chosen. Or, well, there are a lot of people who are educated. They're even educated religiously, and they're sincere, and they're kind people. And they don't do it. They don't do it at that church. They don't do it at that church down the road. And I guarantee you, there are a lot of churches, local churches, within a mile or two of this particular building. There are other buildings that claim some religious affiliation, and they don't do it like you do it here. Why is that, Dad? Why is that, Mom? Now, I'm not suggesting at all that those things aren't covered and we don't do what we can to answer those questions. But my only reason for saying that is, as a parent who has three inquisitive children, all of whom are spiritual, but all of whom on occasions have said to me, why this and why that, and why not this and why not that, and it has been a challenge to me. My guess has been a challenge to you, at least to some degree. And we need to be prepared when our son or our daughter asks us the question. We need to be prepared to say, this is what the Lord says. And this is what that means. And then let me reiterate this statement. In verse 24, he says, and the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is this day. We need to always tell our children the reason that God does what he does, the reason he tells us to do what he does, the reason he wants us to obey and serve him and be the kind of people we need, because it's what's best for us. And he knows that. How do you know? Because he made you. He designed you. He designed you with a purpose, and that purpose is to live for him. It's to fulfill his desire, to fulfill his purpose. That's why he made us. And when we do that to the very best of our ability, it not only serves his purpose, but it serves us well. It's for our good always. And I know that's hard. I think sometimes that's hard for people to see. Sometimes that's hard for young people to see. But to the very best of our ability, we've got to try to help them understand that God has told us what to do because it is the best thing for us. I made this point yesterday, but I want to make it again. I'm not going to tell the same story, obviously, but I just want to make the point because I always know, as I said yesterday, that when I preach lessons like this that relate to family things, I know it creates all sorts of emotion in the hearts of people. And even since yesterday, I've had conversations with some of you, and you've told me stories that are hard to tell. You've told me stories that are hard to hear. You've shared concerns with me about your kids and your grandkids and the fact that maybe they're not what they need to be. And I get that. And I know why those things concern you. They concern me with mine too. But I want to encourage you to not give up. I want to encourage you just never to give up, because the story I told yesterday about the man who flew to Portland, Oregon, stayed 6 hours and flew back home. That was one of those situations that turned out good. And again, I don't know where that man, I don't know if that man's still alive. I don't know whether his son's still faithful to the Lord or not. But for a moment in time, what that man did for his son to help him understand that he had made some mistakes in the raising of his kids, and he was sorry for that. But he wanted him to understand the need for him to be who he ought to be. That can happen. So I want to tell you that I'm praying for people who may have wayward children, children who have abandoned faith. They've given up on what may very well have been a great foundation. Parents who love the Lord, parents who show them the kind of life, parents who teach them, parents who tell them. That may be exactly who you are. And if that's the case, I get it. There are other factors involved. I get it. It's not just what you've done in a parent. There are multiple factors involved, and I get that. But let's be committed. All I'm saying is let's be committed to doing what we can do to be the kind of parent that we need to be. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate that. May God help us toward that end. Well, if you're in this audience tonight, as this church typically does, as the church where I attend typically does, we would offer an invitation for you to respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ. If there's something that's keeping you from having the relationship with God that you need to have, it may simply be that you just want some folks to pray for you. You understand the strength of prayer, and you need some help. I guarantee you this church will be glad to do that. This church will love you, and they'll help you, and they'll pray for you, and we'd certainly do that tonight if that's a need that you have or if you've never obeyed the gospel. What a wonderful, quiet night for you to step out and say, it's time for me to do what I know I ought to do. We help you with that. Come as we stand and as we sing.